So we're talking about the life story of Yaakov Avinu, and in the beginning of the last parak, we quoted a pasuk in Amos, in the Nevuah of Amos, where it talks about a person who runs away from a lion, bumps in, and then as he's running away from a lion, he bumps into a bear, right? And then the continuation of the pasuk is in, and he gets saved from the bear, and then he comes home, and he puts his hand on the wall in his house, and a snake comes out and bites him. That's what it says in Amos. And he's, Amos is comparing that to a person who is a Rasha, and he's waiting for Mashiach to come, and he's telling, like, don't you realize that, like, the problems that you have now are just going to be exacerbated by Mashiach arriving? So, like, the only thing you can do is do tshuva. Don't just wait for Mashiach to come, do tshuva. That's what the Navi Amos is basically saying. And the Midrash explains it as talking about the life of Yaakov Avinu. He's running away from a lion. Said that the lion was Lavan, because he ran away after he left Lavan's house, was running away from him. And he bumps into a bear. We said in the last parak that the bear was Esav. Fine. Now we talk about, okay, he gets to his house, so Yaakov Avinu gets back, finally gets to Eretz Yisrael. And what does he do? He puts his hand next to the wall, and a snake comes out and bites him. So what's the snake coming out and bite him? That's going to be the subject of this parak. It's a fairly long parak, and because we're doing like shorter shiurim, it'll probably take us like 5 or 6 weeks. The first part of the parak talks about the story of Dinah and Shechem. Then it talks about Yaakov and Esav, sort of how they reconciled at Yitzchak's death. And then it talks about the sale of Yosef. And then it goes on a side topic of different excommunication bans, because when the brothers sold Yosef, so they said, like, they made a incommunicado about telling about the sale. So then it talks about, you know, different cases where they made a public harem in history. And then the next parak is going to be about Yaakov and continuation of the story of Yosef and Mitzrayim, and Yaakov coming down to Mitzrayim and the last days of Yaakov's life. And then afterwards we go parak mem, is really about Moshe Rabbeinu. So like we basically finished Sefer Bereishis. Okay, so what, the snake that came out and bit Yaakov Avinu, Kilu, like, what's this snake? What's it a reference to? Says the Mesh. Ksiv says in the pasuk in Amos, Uvo Abayis, he came to his house, Vezomach Yodai Alakir, and he put his hand next to the wall, Unushochei Hanochash, and the snake bit him. So what's that referring to? Kishabo Yaakov Leveisai Be'eretz Achuzosoi Shebe'eretz Kanan, when Yaakov Avinu came to his house in the land of his inheritance, in the land of Canaan, Nushochei Hanochash, the snake bit him. Ve'ezei Nochash, what is that snake? Ze Shechem ben Chamor. This is a reference to Shechem ben Chamor, the person who we're going to see was the one who ended up violating Yaakov Avinu's daughter. Why is he called a snake? So Marzu explains, based on the Medrash and Kehelas Rabbah, because he's Shechem ben Chamor HaChivi, the Chivite. And the word chivia or chivia, chivi or chivia in Aramaic actually means snake. So if you translate his name, it's Shechem ben Chamor HaChivi, the snake. Right? That's sort of like pashup shot. Rabbi Liomi Izmir explains that actually it doesn't say HaChivi, at least in my period of the Blyazer, but the Radal says it should say the word HaChivi. Zeh Shechem ben Chamor HaChivi, the snake. Rabbi Liomi Izmir says a very interesting idea based on Arizal. I don't really want to get into it because I don't feel comfortable saying over this whole approach that he takes. But he basically says an idea that Dina has to do with Chava, that Dina was sort of a Gilgul of Chava, and that he says that Dina, the letters of the word Dina is the same letters as the word Nida. And just like Chava is the woman who brought the concept of Nida to the world, so Dina is also a continuation of that reincarnation of that person. So he says that like Dina is Chava, and he says that the Shechem ben Chamor, why are we calling him a snake? Because he's sort of an incarnate of that original snake that enticed Chava to sin. And the way that Rizal says it, sort of like the tikkun for the sin of Chava is that the Nachash has to have relations with Dina. Like that Shechem will be with Dina. And that's sort of going to like fix the original sin somehow. Exactly, I don't know exactly how we understand these things, Kabbalistic concepts that are a little bit beyond my grasp. But that's sort of his basic approach, and then he explains how like some of the things that happened in this paragraph sort of justified, but I don't like to justify bad things, so I'm going to stay away from it. But there is such an approach. Fine. So what did Shechem ben Chamor do? Says the Medrash, Shehayis Abita Shel Yaakov Yeshevis Oholim, the daughter of Yaakov, meaning Dina, was Yeshevis Oholim. She used to sit in the tent. Right, like we say about, see, when we say by Yaakov Avinu, it was Yaakov's Yeshev Aholim. He sits in the tent. Yaakov Ishtam Yeshev Aholim. He was a wholesome person. He would sit in the tent. So Chazal tells us that means that he would learn Torah. That's what it means, Yeshev Aholim, for a man, because the Ikar Mitzvah for a man is Limud Torah. When we talk about for a woman, Yeshev Yeshevas Aholim, the Dina was sitting in the tent. That's referring to her extraordinary character in the mid of Tznius, of modesty. That she would, you know, she wouldn't go outside. Call Kveid Abbas Malach Pnima. Say that Nashim Ba'ayel, Minashim Ba'ayel Tevayrach. That's the Lashon that Devorah said in her song when she's singing about this Ya'el, the woman who killed Sisera. So she says, Minashim Ba'ayel Tevayrach. You should be more blessed than the women in the tent. And Chazal tells, who are those women in the tent? That's referring to the Imai, Sar Rivka Rachel Leah. Right? They were the women in the tent. When the Malach came to visit Avram Avinu, she said he asked, "Aye Sarah Yishtacha, where is your wife Sarah?" And Avram Avinu said, "Hine ba'ayel, she's in the tent." That's the idea that Dina was Yeshevas Aholim v'lo yhayisa yaitzei sachutza. Dina was somebody who would sit in her tent and she wouldn't go outside. Now Rashi, the lashon of the pasuk when it talks about this story, it says v'tetei Dina bas Leah. Dina bas Leah went out. And Rashi and Chumash brings down that, why does it say Vatetze Dina Bas Leah? It says that because Leah, there's a story with the Udayim, that she went out to greet Yaakov Avinu and say that he's going to be with her that night. So it says she went out. So we see that Leah is the type of person who goes out. So Rashi says that Dina is also the type of person who goes out. There was some sort of chisarn in the midah of Tznius, according to Rashi, in Dina. But the Radal explained, or you could say, yeah. The Radal says that maybe that has to do with the famous Gemara that says that originally when Leah was pregnant with her seventh kid, so it was originally going to be a boy, and then she realized that if she has a seventh boy, then Rachel's only going to have one boy instead of two. So she prayed that boy won't be a boy; it'll be a girl. And then it sort of switched. The Targum Edison says the Malach came and took Yosef was originally in Leah's stomach, took Yosef, put her into Rachel's stomach, and took out Dina from Rachel's stomach and put her into Leah's stomach. But originally Dina was supposed to be born like a boy. So the Radal says that could be that in certain aspects she had the nature of a boy, like a, sort of like a tomboy type of idea. But the Medrash over here, as the Radal says, is saying the opposite. It wasn't a chisaron in Dina that she was the type of person who would go out. No, she was Yeshevas Aholim. She would sit in the tent. She wouldn't go out. It's coming exactly to exclude what the opinion of Rashi and Medrash Rabbah, etc. So why is she called? Okay, that's one thing. So me'os. So what? So she was the type of person who would be in her tent. Me also Shechem ben Chamor. What did Shechem ben Chamor do? I mean, we're assuming for some reason that Shechem ben Chamor knew that Dina exists. If she didn't go outside, then how does he know that she exists? You would probably have to say that it doesn't literally mean that she never went outside. She obviously went outside, you know, as much as needed, but she would have tried to curtail that to not go outside more than necessary. And for whatever reason, somehow Shechem knew about her and decided that he wanted her. So what did he do in order to attract her? Hevi mischakois ne'orois chutzola misayfavois betupim. He brought young girls, he brought them to be outside of her tent, and they were playing musical instruments. And that piqued or aroused Dina's curiosity. So Yotzo Dina Lirais Babanes Hamesachakes. So Dina went outside to go watch these girls that were playing, because that's the nature of a woman when she hears music. The Radal says it's a Gemara Ma'id Katan, Daf Testament Beis, that when a woman, the nature of a woman is that when she hears music, she's attracted to the music and wants to go out and see what's happening over there. The curiosity, that meat of curiosity, is what got her. Interestingly, the Gemara that the Radal brings, it says, Bas Shitin kibas shis lekal tavla riata. It's a Gemara in Ma'idkata. It says a woman who's 60 years old is like the same as a woman who's 6 years old in regard that they would be running after the voice of a music. They would be attracted to it to find out like what's happening and join in if they can. And then the Radal notes that in Masechta Sofer it actually says that Dina was 6 years old in this story. So that like it's very appropriate that the Medrash says that the Gemara says 60 is like 6 years old in this regard, and then we're talking about a girl who's actually 6 years old, at least according to Masechta Sofer at the end over there in Perikof Aleph. Mamish towards the end of the Sefer of Masechta Sofer it says that Dina was 6 years old when this story happened to her. Other sources say that she was eight years old or 8.5 years old. There's different sources exactly how old Dina was when this story happened. Fine. So that's how Shechem ben Chabar was able to get Dina to go outside. What did he do to her? Vishalallah, he captured her as booty, Vishacha Vaisa, and he lied with her. Fine. What happened? You know, so also the Radal points out, it says in the Pasuk, Vaidaber Alev Hanara, he spoke upon the heart of the girl. So that sounds like he actually convinced her. But the Radal's no. The Medrash is coming to tell us no. It doesn't mean that he actually convinced her. It means that he forced her. He tried to convince her, but he wasn't successful. Fine. The Harsa Violda is Asnas. And Dina became pregnant, and from that, she gave birth to Asnas. And we're gonna see later on in the parak, that Asnas was actually the person who married Yosef HaTzadik. And there's a whole cheshbon in the Mitzvah HaSer from how it was that to say that Dina was 6 years old. There's a whole cheshbon that says that Yaakov, you know, worked for Lavan for 6 years, etc. Okay, we as I already said, there's some opinions say she was six, some eight, some 8.5. But the shaila is, as Rav Sadia going to ask the shaila, says that if she was only 6 or 8, so how did she become pregnant? A woman that young, even if someone has relations with her, she's not going to become pregnant. So how are we saying over here that when Dina was raped, so she became pregnant, she gave birth to Asnas? So I guess in order to answer Rav Sadia Gaon's question, you would have to say that the nature of people in earlier generations was different. The Gemara says that men used to be fathers when they were already 7, 8 years old. So you could say the same thing, I guess, that their nature was before Matan Torah or whatever exactly it was, that the nature used to be different. Nishtana teva, the nature has changed. That's one mahalach you could say. Another mahalach you could say is there's actually, I mean, this doesn't really answer the question so much. It's a different approach. Our Medrash is saying that Asnas was the daughter of Dina, but there's another Medrash that says that Asnas was actually Egyptian. She wasn't from the daughter of Dina, and she is a Geirus. She converted. That's the Medrash Tadshe. It's brought in Eitzer Midrashim. The Chassidei Ashkenaz bring this Medrash in a few places. The Yudah Chassid, the Rekef, etc. They seem to go with this Medrash that Asnas was not actually the daughter of Dina. She was actually an Egyptian woman who converted and Yosef married her. So if you go like that, so then you don't have a question anymore. Oh, how did Dina get pregnant? No, we will be holding a different Medrash. V'amru b'nei Yisrael l'harga. B'nei Yisrael, the sons of Israel, meaning Yaakovina's sons, they wanted to kill her. Who was it that they wanted to kill? It's not clear exactly. I first thought it means that they wanted to kill Dina, but I think that the pshat is that they wanted to kill Asnas. It seems like they wanted to kill Asnas. Sha'achshav yemru kol ha'aretz. Now everyone, all the people of the land are going to say sheish beis znus ba'ohel Yaakov, that there's a house of harlotry in the tents of Jacob, or sheish bas zima ba'ohel Yaakov, that there's a daughter of licentiousness in the tents of Jacob. Not there's two gersoys over there, right? So the sons of Yaakov wanted to get rid of her. We got to get rid of. It seems they want to get rid of Asnas. And they want to do something because otherwise it makes the family look bad. May also have like lahavdil, like the Muslims do honor killings if their sister does something bad, so they, you know, go out and kill her. May also Yaakov. So what did Yaakov Avinu do? Heavy tzitz. He brought tzitz, like a plate. Because of love, Shem Hakodesh. And Yaakov Avinu wrote on this plate. He wrote the special name of Hashem, V'sola al tzavarah, and he hanged this plate on her neck, on Asnas' neck. And he sent her off, and she went away. And therefore, he gave her this special this necklace that had this plate that had the Shem of Hashem, and he sent her off with it. What's the idea of giving her this plate to send her off with? So the Bais HaGadol explains that Stam Pashup Shad, he didn't want her to die, he wanted her to be protected. So he wrote like a Khmer, like some sort of amulet with the Shem Hashem written on this plate in order to protect her. As Lachara Pashup Shad, Bais HaGadol says. But there's another element to it, that there's a halacha called an Asufi, brought in the Mitzachas Kedushin, last parak, also in Evin Ezer and Simon Dalet, it's passed in the halacha. If you find a child, we don't know who this child is. Just, someone knocks on your door, you open the door, and now there's a little bassinet over there, and you don't know where this child came from. You have reason to believe that it's Jewish, let's say. You don't know where it came from, and you bring it into your house, and you raise the child, etc. So the question is, what is the halachic status of that person? Are they considered, what's the yichus status of that person? The genealogical status, is that person considered a mamzer, not considered a mamzer? So there's a halacha called an asufi. An asufi is someone who literally means asuf, gathered, someone who's gathered in from the marketplace. So has that such a person has the halachic status as a suffic mamzer, a person of dubious lineage, questionable lineage, and you're not necessarily, you're not allowed to marry a Sufi. Now the halacha is that if the person who gave up this child, because we assume that somebody did something wrong, they had ancestral relation or whatever, and this child was born from that, and they gave up the child because they didn't want to end up raising an illegitimate child like that. But if when you find this asufi, abandoned child, if you find in a way that the child was set up that it could survive, and that the parents actually wanted it to be okay, not to die, the parents felt for its well-being, so then we're going to assume that no, the child is not a suffic mamzer, rather the parents couldn't afford it and they want to come pick it up later or something like that, and the child's yichus is considered legitimate and it's not problematic. That's halacha of a Sufi. So the Mefarsh and the Radal and Bais HaGadol both explain that when Yaakov Avinu put this necklace around Asnas, when they sent her away, he was trying to show that if someone finds her, she's not an Asufi, she's not a Sufik Mamzeres, rather she's a legitimate child because I gave her a special amulet to protect her. And that's how we can answer the question that, how is Yosef, we're going to see it in a minute or so, that Yosef HaTzadik ended up marrying Asnas, so the question is how can he marry her if she's a Sufik Mamzeres? So the answer is no, she's not a Sufi. It's a different status because she had this special amulet that was done to protect her. The Radal brings another medrash from the Rabbeinu, in the name of Rabbeinu Bechai, he brings a medrash that says that why is she called Asnas? Because she was hidden in the bushes, besne, like Asnas is like Lashon of Sne. So also that same idea, what's the idea of hiding her in the bushes? Because you hide her in the bushes, she's protected from the elements, she's protected from the animals, so you see that her parents cared for her well-being, and she's not in a Sufi. Says the Medrash, "Va'akayol tzafui lefnei Kadosh Baruch Hu." Everything is foreseen in front of Hashem. What he arranges everything to happen, and this story happened in a way that Hashem arranged it so that Yosef is going to be able to marry someone that he's fitting to marry. "Va'yorad Michael Hamalach v'hirido lemitzvayin leveisa shel Potifera." Michael, the angel, came down and he brought Asnas down to Egypt, to the house of Potiphera, Shahaisa Asnas Ru'uya Yosef Leisha, because Asnas was fitting to Yosef to be a wife. Vaisa Ishta Ishal Potiphera Akara Vigidla Isa Kivas. And the wife of Potiphera was an Akara, she was barren, she wasn't able to have children, so she took Asnas and she adopted Asnas and she raised Asnas as her own daughter. There's an interesting medrash. The medrash says that what's the reason that the wife of Potiphera, why was she so interested in Yosef HaTzadik, that she was pursuing her and trying to seduce him so much? Why was she so interested in him? So the medrash says that she saw through her astrology that she's destined to have children through Yosef. So therefore, she understood that she's that's her destiny, that she's supposed to do something with Yosef, have relations with Yosef. So Chaim Kanievsky brings this medrash and he says, "Oh, you have a raya from this medrash that the daughter that Osnas was not actually the daughter of Dina, but was actually the daughter of Potiphera, or the wife of Potiphera, because she saw an astrologer, she's supposed to have children with Yosef, and that's what happened, right?" So Chaim Kanievsky wants to bring out, not like our Pirkei d'Eliezer, that Osnas was the daughter of Dina, but rather that Osnas was an Egyptian girl who converted or whatever. Because it says in the Medrash that Potiphera's wife saw in astrology that she's destined to have children through Yosef. Chaim Kanievsky brings this raya, Ober L'maisa, it's not really such a strong raya, because you could say that astrology is not 100%, it's not foolproof, and we find in many places in Chazal, and I don't want to get into all the different places, but we find many places in Chazal where people saw things in astrology and it wasn't exactly 100% accurate, and they made mistakes in interpreting the results in the readings, and it's not foolproof. So just because that's what the wife of Potiphera saw, that doesn't mean that that's actually true. And Rav Tzadok HaKohen Milublin, famous Rav Tzadok, he writes in one of his forum, he actually answers this question a little bit better. He says that when the wife of Potiphera saw through astrology that she's destined to have children through Yosef, it didn't mean that she herself was actually have children through Yosef. It meant through Osnas. And even though Osnas, like the Medrash over here says, is the daughter of Dina, she wasn't related to the wife of Potiphera. But because it says over here, Gidlo Isa Kivas, the wife of Potiphera raised Osnas like a daughter, and Chazal tell us that if you raise somebody, you adopt a child and you raise them, it's as if you gave birth to them. So therefore, the astrology made it that she thought that she's going to have children through Yosef. But really it wasn't through her descendants or through her herself. It was actually through the daughter of Dina that she raised. Alright. When Yosef came down to Mitzrayim, he took her as a wife. Shinamar, as it says in the pasuk, "Va'yitin leis Osnas bas Potiphera kohen ein leisha." He gave her Osnas. Paro gave to Yosef Osnas, the daughter of Potiphera kohen ein, the priest of On, which is Heliopolis, which is the center of the sun worship in Egypt. Leisha as a wife. Mufarshim say, why Dafka did Paro marry off Yosef to the daughter of Potiphera? Because Paro wanted to show that, you know, Yosef really wasn't guilty of what people said he was guilty of, why he was originally thrown in jail. He really wasn't guilty. God, give you a proof that he wasn't guilty. Look, he's marrying the lady's daughter. Or this is what people thought was the lady's daughter. Fine, going back to the story of Dina and Shechem, says the Medrash, Shimon and Levi, kino gedola al znus. Shimon and Levi had great zealousness over this znus, over this, not necessarily adultery, but over this promiscuous activity. Shinemar, it says in the pasuk, "Hachazinad yasas hachesenu." They said, "Are you going to make our sister like a prostitute? No, we can't let you do that." So instead, they punished the entire city of Shechem. What did they do? V'lakul ish charbay v'hargu es kol anshe Shechem. Each man took his sword, meaning Shimon and Levi. Both of them took their sword and they killed out the city, all the people of the city of Shechem. Fine. Now, the question is, what did the people of Shechem do to deserve such a death? They didn't do anything wrong. It was Shechem ben Hamor who raped Dina. It wasn't all the people of the city. So why are all the people of the city getting killed? Okay, so I found in the Rishonim three different explanations of exactly why Shimon and Levi decided to kill out the entire city. We'll go through them rather quickly because we're sort of pressed for time. Okay, so what are the three explanations? The first explanation is the Rambam. Now, a little bit of an introduction to this explanation is like this. We know that there's seven Noahide mitzvahs, right? The seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. Do you know what the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach are? Yeah? Okay. So, not everybody necessarily knows what they are. So, when I was a little kid, my father taught me a trick. How to remember the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. Could you heard this one? It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf and Nun Hein, or something like that. It lists the seven mitzvahs. But there's a trick how to remember all seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, in case you ever forget them. You go down from Aleph to Zion in Aleph base. Aleph, Eivir Menachai.
Beis is Birkas Hashem, meaning not cursing Hashem. Gimel is Gezel, not stealing. Dalet is Dinim, that Bnei Nayach are obligated to set up a court system of punishments and rewards, etc. Hey is Hereg. Vav is Va'avodah Zara, not to commit idolatry. And Zayin is Lus, that they're not allowed to commit certain sexual forbidden relations. And those are the seven mitzvahs Bnei Nayach. So he said the fourth one, Dalet Dinim, it requires Bnei Nayach to set up a court system so that they can punish criminals and seek out justice. So the Rambam explains that if a Goyisha society, a Ben Nayach, a Noahide society, does not set up a court system and do not punish criminals, so then they're held responsible, they're violating this rule of the seven mitzvahs Bnei Nayach, and the Chayv Misa, they're culpable themselves for capital punishment. And the Rambam explains that that's what happened over here in the story of Shechem. Because Shechem ben Hamor raped Dinah and he got away with it, and the society let him do it, and they didn't take him to justice, they didn't bring him to court, they didn't treat him like a criminal, so the entire city is complicit in the act, and therefore they're all liable for the death penalty, and that's why Shimon and Levi was able to go out and kill the whole city. That's what the Rambam says. And the Shai Lameshiv, the Yosef Shol Natanzin, in his Sefer Divrei Shol and Chumash, so he brings from Sefer Yashar, that Sefer Yashar says more or less the same idea, that because they didn't protest Shechem ben Hamor's actions, the whole city was culpable. That's one explanation. The second explanation is that of the Ramban. The Ramban explains that the reason why Shimon and Levi killed out the entire city, Ramban Chumash, says the reason why, because of this, but for other affairs that they happen to have done. They also do Avodah Zarah, they also do Gilui Arayos themselves. So each person, there was a reason why each person was liable for the death penalty, so Shimon and Levi went and carried it out and killed them all. That's the second, the Ramban's explanation. But the Ramban will tell you that not setting up a court system, that doesn't make you liable for the death penalty. That's basically the argument between the Rambam and the Ramban. The third explanation is Rabbeinu Chaim Paltiel, one of the Rishonim, he was the Talmud of the Maharami Rutenberg. Rabbeinu Chaim Paltiel says that the reason why Shimon and Levi killed out the entire city is because they all took turns raping Dinah. It wasn't just Shechem ben Chamor, it was everyone. Maybe he was the leader, the gang leader, but everyone did it. I don't know if it means also the women and the children were also killed, it seems. But everyone was involved. Not just that they had the sin of silence, but they actively partook in the sin of raping her, and they joined in. So therefore, they also got punished. They were killed out by Shimon and Levi as well. Fine. So those are the three explanations of why Shimon and Levi killed out the whole city. When Yaakov Avinu heard that Shimon and Levi killed out the whole city, Nisiari Harbe Ma'id, he was very scared. Sh'amar, he said, Afshav Yetzu Kol Amei Ha'oretz, now all the nations of the land are going to come out, V'yei Osva Alai V'yarguni, and they're going to go gather up against me, and they're going to kill me, because I killed out a whole city, and people are going to be upset, and there's going to be international outcry. So Hizchel Mekalal Rogzom Shalbanav, so he began to curse the anger of his two sons, Shimon and Levi. Shinamar says the Pasuk, Shimon and Levi Achim, right? Orur Apam, their anger should be cursed. He cursed the anger of Shimon and Levi. Va'oid, furthermore, Shekilol Escharbam B'lashon Yevanis. Yaakov Avinu cursed their sword in the Greek language. What does that mean? Shinamar, it says in the Pasuk, Kleikamas Mechare Sehem. A vessel of violence is in their arsenal. What does that mean? A vessel of violence is in their arsenal. She'evanim karen l'cherev mocher. Mechorei sehem is in their arsenal. And the Greeks call a sword mocher. The word for sword, I guess in Greek, is mocher. So Yaakov specifically cursed their sword in Greek. That's an interesting idea. Why Dafka did Yaakov curse their sword in Greek? What does that mean? He cursed them in Greek. Like the rest of it is in Lashon HaKodesh. And he used this one word in Greek. So Rabbi Eliyahu Meizmir explains that he didn't want to curse them completely in Lashon HaKodesh because that would make it a very strong curse. But if you use it in Greek, which is a less powerful language, so then it's not as effective. I spoke about this actually in my book on Lashon HaKodesh by Bilam. The Bilam used to curse in Daf specifically in Lashon HaKodesh because that's the most effective, because that language is the most real language. But here it's saying that he cursed them in Greek because Yaakov didn't want to actually curse his two sons with like a really strong curse. So if you curse them in Greek, or at least one word in Greek, it's a weaker curse. Yeah, we'll just finish a few more lines. Shomo kol malchei ha'aretz v'nisro me'oid. All the kings of the land heard about this, that Shimon and Levi killed out an entire city, v'nisro me'oid, and they were very scared. Yaakov Avinu was scared that the people are going to fight him, but the people were scared of Yaakov Avinu. Amru, they said, Im shnei b'nei Yaakov Avinu also adav razeh, if two sons of Yaakov Avinu could do this thing, they could kill out an entire city, then also chulom, yuchon l'hachar v'sa'ilam. If all the sons of Yaakov Avinu would gather together, they could destroy the entire world. So the people actually were very scared. Not like Yaakov Avinu said that, you know, the people are going to be angry and they're going to fight us. Rather, the mitzvah was that the people were very scared. And the fear of Hashem fell on all the people of the land. The fear of Hashem was upon all the people of the land, and they actually didn't start fighting with Yaakov Avinu in response to this story. They, you know, left him alone. But there is a Medrash called Sefer Yashar that the Medrash discusses a whole bunch of wars that the children of Yaakov Avinu fought, Melchemes Bnei Yaakov, different wars that they fought in response to this story that different nations tried to fight their revenge for the city of Shechem. And the Ramban and Chumash, interestingly, mentions such a thing of this Medrash Melchemes Bnei Yaakov, and the Ramban says, I'm not sure if you could believe it or not. But here Chazal seem to be going with the idea that, no, the people, the Goyim were scared, they didn't try to start up with Yaakov Avinu. So, fine, so we'll stop over here, and the Izra Shem will continue.
Questions,
but oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, number one. Why did Yaakov throw out Dina?
Well, he didn't throw out Dina, he threw out Asnas.
He threw out Asnas.
Yeah.
Why did he throw out Asnas?
Because it makes the family look bad, because people are going to be able to point at her and say, oh, this girl was born from some sort of forbidden or some shady relationship.
So why didn't Dina have an abortion then?
Why didn't Dina have an abortion? I don't know. I don't know if they had thought of that. Maybe they only realized she was pregnant after 40 days, and then after 40 days it's problematic to have an abortion. Maybe, I don't know.
I'm a liberal.
Yeah, you're a liberal.
I'm a liberal. I'm a liberal who's forced to vote Republican every time because I'm Jewish. You'd never know it from my voting record.
Yeah.
But I'm pro-abortion.
Yeah.
Okay? So the thing is, here he is, like the Republicans in America, they're very anti-American.
No, I think I have a better answer. It says in the Medrash that she got pregnant and she gave birth to Asnas, and then it says, and then afterwards, the sons of Jacob said, you know, we want to get rid of her. They only said it after she was already born. That's what it seems like.
Well, that's the Republicans in America. They're very anti-abortion. Oh, no, have the baby.
Yeah.
Once the baby's born, they are against any child care, any aid to education, any, you know, aid to dependent children thing, any food stamps, stuff like that. So I've always said that the question about abortion is not when life begins, but when life ends. And according to these people, life ends at birth. Okay.
The government, you know, the conservatives don't feel that that's the... responsibility of the government.
Then let the woman have an abortion. You know. Anyway, that's the first. Second thing is, in the Torah, if a man rapes a woman,
yeah,
he has to marry her, or he's, if she's willing to.
If she's willing to, and if the father is willing to, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And the punishment for rape is not death.
Right.
So how come the punishment for rape with Shem was death?
Because, first of all, Bnei Noach are held to a different standard than Bnei Yisrael are held to. So, for Bnei Noach, any type... First of all, there's a halacha that if a non-Jew has relations with a Jew, they're automatically chayiv misa. There's such a Rambam. It's censored in some editions, but there is such a Rambam. That's what's that. The second point is that...
So wait a second, every intermarriage nowadays is chayav misa theoretically?
Possibly. At least according to the Rambam. The second idea is that you could... There's another difference between...
Oh yeah, we're getting back to Rambam. Does it work both ways?
Hold on a second. There's another difference between the halachas of that Jews are held to the standard that Jews are held to, and to the standard that Bnei Noach are held to. In regard to Jews, the prohibition of stealing, you know, is limited to, you know, if you steal more than a pruta, a certain value. And for a guy, if you steal even less than a pruta, you know, that's considered stealing. So one of the mafarshim, could be the Ramban, I think himself says this, that when you rape a woman, so you are in a way, you're stealing from her father. Because if he wanted to marry her off, if she was a virgin, so he can marry her off and you know, get a better deal. But now, not necessarily from the father, I'm sorry, you're stealing from her future husband. Right? Because if you marry her, wait, no, one second.
Same for her father, because he gets a better deal, it's worth more.
Father, right, because she's worth more, right, yeah, that's what I meant to say, right.
That's why he's going to pay a fine.
That's why he's going to pay a fine, right.
So that's why he's going to pay a fine.
But the fine, the knas, is in our halachas, in parashas mishpatim, in the Jewish halachas. In Goyish halachas, that's considered stealing. And the punishment for stealing is death.
But this, oh yeah, by the way, the third thing,
yeah,
that everybody took part in the rape.
Yeah.
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I don't think Shem would have wanted to marry her. I think Shem would not have allowed his countrymen to rape her after him.
I don't know. Some people are very depraved and you don't know exactly what makes them tick.
Then why does he want to marry her?
I don't know. But I'm saying, like, and also, maybe the people of the city did it, even not necessarily with Shechem's consent. Some, like, once she's already here, then we might as well.
Well,
do.
There's another thing then, and getting back to the first thing from the Rambam,
but yeah,
you know, about setting up a court system. He's the king. How are the people going to put the king to justice?
I mean, I don't think that Shechem ben Hamor wasn't the king. His father was sort of like the mayor of the city. But again, a king is not exempt from justice. In Jewish law, you know, if a king does an avera, you know, he can be taken down from being king, depending on exactly what the avera was, or, you know, demoted or something. There has to be justice. You know, the buck has to stop somewhere. There's no different standards for different people, and especially we're talking about the laws of Edom, which are universal laws, which apply to all of humanity.
Now getting back to if a Jewish man, non-Jewish woman, does it work both ways? Jewish man, non-Jewish woman, and then a Jewish woman, non-Jewish man, machayavis, or does it only work one way?
I don't remember offhand. So look in the Rambam, I don't remember, where is it? Hilchos Melachim maybe? I don't remember where it is. It's in either Yisrael, I'll try to find it for a different time.
So, by the way, when they threw her out, how's a 3-year-old girl supposed to survive?
Who said she was 3?
How old was she when they threw her out?
We never said how old she was when they threw her out. We don't know how old Osnas was when they threw her out.
And why did the sons want to get rid of her that much?
It says it because it makes the family look bad, and people are going to be able to point and say, you know, this girl was born from some sort of shady relationship.
But the mother was raped. I mean, you can't blame anybody for that.
That's true. I don't know exactly how to understand.
Now, here's another question. Isn't there a medrash that Shimon eventually married her?
There is such a medrash. Married either Osnas or married Dina. There's different versions of that medrash.
So how could he marry Osnas? He could marry Osnas. Because he can marry his niece.
Right.
But how could he marry his full sister?
So it's a good question. The truth is that there's a mention that says that all of the Shvatim married their twin sisters, or married twin sisters.
Well, I figured like you know that let's say Reuven married because there were six, so he could have married
right.
a different mother.
Right. So the I think it's the Pirsha Torah Lotera says basically what you answered, that they married from different mothers. Except that Shimon and Dina had the same mother technically, right? But according to same father, Shimon and Dina.
They're
brother and sisters from the same mother, same father. But like based on what I was saying before, the idea that really Dina was originally in the mother of Rachel and it switched. So then, in certain ways, Dina would be considered, you know, only Shimon's paternal sister, not maternal sister, and by Bnei Noach, a paternal sister is allowed. Only maternal sister is
allowed. Yeah, because Anthony, because all the
and
other.
Actually, this Pirusha, I think it's a Pirusha Torah letter, the place can bring this down in regard to figuring out the halachic status of surrogate motherhood.
Really?
Because she, let's say, she, when Dina was conceived, she was in Rachel's stomach. But when she was born in Leah's stomach. It's like, what do you do with what is that? Could you say any practical ramifications of that in halacha, in contemporary halacha?
Yeah.
So the Mufarshim also say that, you know, maybe you can't because this is an agadata, it's a medrash, it's not necessarily a halachic ruling, but yeah. I gotta go, it's getting very late for me. I haven't even got home yet today.
Oh.